look at the students, look at the younger people, listen to them. They're not judging each other so quickly. They are trying to understand who are you and what might we be able to do together.
This episode is sponsored by Etched Communication, a full-service public relations and crisis management firm. Connect with Etched via their website at etchedcom.com. That's etchedcomm.com. I'm delighted to have our guest here with us today. Dr. Ira K. Blake is the president of the University of Houston Clear Lake. She is the first female president of the university, the first African-American president of the university, and just an educator extraordinaire and fantastic human being, which is why I wanted to talk to her today. Welcome. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm honored to be here.
You are leading this university at a very difficult and contentious time in our nation's history. How are you navigating that as the leader of a university with young people who are watching how this world is unfolding?
One of the things that I try to do is to have contact with them continually to set a model in terms of the kinds of questions they should be asking about their own roles in society, okay? That it's not just about getting a degree, it's also about understanding that you have an obligation to try to help the world be a better place for all of us. So I try to walk that around, asking questions, trying to create opportunities where we have panels come in. Whenever, these sound like small things, but it's incredibly important for us to create a context that supports what we value. So right now, I'm making sure that the screens around the campus are reporting out current events. Sounds like a small thing, but it's important. Every building that you go into on the different floors, the current events, the status of the world, the status of the country, the status of Texas, are constantly being reported out. Ensuring that faculty who are wonderful, we have wonderful faculty who actually value what they do in relationship to creating a better world. So those conversations are drifting into the Student Governance Association and to the various clubs where faculty are actually advising, and then also making sure that my conversations with students are meaningful about the roles that they feel they can take on. And if they're not sure, quizzing them, you know, about what it is that they feel they can do that can contribute to improving their lives and also helping to improve the communities in which they live and the persons that they care about.
So I love the fact that you said you're making sure that the various screens around the university have current events reflected on them. That was not the case before?
No, there actually were not monitors throughout the buildings.
Okay.
Where the monitors that were there basically were reporting out for the unit. They were not connected.
So you made that change. Mm-hmm. How has that impacted the university in terms of the dialogue that students are having about what's going on in the world today?
Well, what's happening is we're going to have the SGA president who has met with a couple of representatives.
SGA being?
Oh, Student Governance.
Okay.
Government Association.
Okay.
Mohammed Abdul Jalil actually will be doing a moderation of a civic responsibility panel of state representatives. That's what we're working on right now, to not just have them observing, but having them actually to engage with our representatives. So, and what will happen is, what I'm hoping will happen, is that those representatives will talk to them about the importance of local politics as well as national. We tend to, as you know, we have larger turnouts of voters during the national elections. Mm-hmm. When the politics were the things that actually impact your life directly or happening where?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The local level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
exactly.
With the councilmen and state representatives, and particularly in a state that's as complicated legislatively closely as Texas is. So that's the way in which we're having impact. Also, the students are becoming, the organizations are starting to collaborate together to address some of the community needs. For example, let's talk about a food drive, you know, or bringing in school supplies that would help children in elementary school, or even right there, as we know that unfortunately in the country there's a lot of food insecurity, mm-hmm. and every university is experiencing that too, as we are. So doing those kind of drives to help each other,
right.
to help to...
Getting the students involved in the political process, you know, while they're in college, I think is such an important component, and I'm really happy to see that that's happening from, you know, leading from the top of the university. I'm wondering, you started at the university 2.5 years ago.
So 2017.
Okay, so just shortly, a few months after the 2016 election. Mm-hmm. What changes have you seen, if any, in your student body representation in terms of how students are relating to each other as this time has evolved?
I will talk about one thing that is incredibly important is that the diversity of the Student Government Association has been phenomenal. It represents the various genders, various nationalities. It's absolutely beautiful. And I think that my presence there as a first woman, first African American, has actually made race, ethnicity, and gender more prominent in terms of the way in which we include those perspectives. My leadership team is extraordinarily diverse, more diverse than it was before I arrived. The student organizations are collaborating, and when I say that, it's incredibly important because those organizations are about affinity, what you want to focus on. So if I can get the Arab Association to work with the Christian Association, with the Latino Studies Program, with social justice. That's what's happening. They are co-sponsoring. They're identifying their voice on the campus. One of the things I am really pleased about is at our university council meeting, the student representative, who is Mohammed Abdi-Jalil, who is the president of the Student Governance Association, his voice is clearer now than when I first arrived in terms of speaking up on students' issues. You know, shared
really?
Governance is something that we talk about, but typically it's superficially done, you know, often. And shared governance is not just about administrators and faculty, it's about staff members and the roles that they play and what they can contribute in terms of helping us to advance or resolve issues, and students who were there to serve. And so what is happening is the students are understanding that their voice is important, that this is a safe space for them to apply their knowledge, experience, and also listen to, I call us their elders. Okay, and so one of the most beautiful things is that Mohammed has stood up and genuinely spoken about how the students view certain potential actions that we're going to take or goals that we mm-hmm. set.
It's so interesting to hear that this is going on your campus, because I'm sure you obviously keep abreast of what's going on campuses around the country. And in many cases, we have seen places or times where students are feeling like their voices are not being heard. That perhaps if they are expressing an opinion or a point of view that is not in line with the majority, that they are then being shouted down. And I'm struck by what you just said, that you want your students to know that this is a safe space, a safe place where they can express their ideas and their opinions. Talk a little bit more about that, because that's extremely important as they you know, build the foundation to lead us into the future.
I'll talk about a couple of, I believe, really important changes that I've made. One of the important things is that we as the leaders in the institution, vice presidents, provost, when there are functions, when the students are presenting the opportunities to engage in the I call it the real world space out there, and they have what they call an organizational fair, we attend. And so we go around and we talk with them, see ways in which we can support them in the goals that they may
set. So it's not just the students having an event or their own thing, and the university hierarchy doesn't pay attention or show up.
No. We're trying to, trying to ensure that they understand that we all have roles around whatever an opportunity or a challenge is. Something that I do that is incredibly important is that monthly I meet with the Student Governance Executive Council. And what they do is they bring directly to me concerns that the students may have, opportunities that they would like to take advantage of, want their voice to be heard and respected in everything that we do. If it's designing a building, if it's we're talking about a health initiative, so what dimensions of that are important to them? Because first and foremost, it's for them. We will also participate because we want to role model, and that's incredibly important to make sure they understand that we're just not talking,
right?
We're actually walking that talk.
I love that.
Okay.
I love that.
So they also, the other issue is, and this is important, every Friday I walk about the campus. And I walk about the campus so that I run into students, that I run into faculty, and I ask them questions, how is it going? I go into the bookstore regularly and talk to the students in there. They know that they can sign up. They and the faculty have absolute open access to me. If I'm there and I don't have a meeting, then they just have to speak to my assistant. Ms. Webster will get them in. Okay, we are there to support them in their development, not just in their academic programming, but so that they can frame their entire life. And we know how important it is for them to understand they have responsibilities to their neighborhoods, their communities, to the region in which mm-hmm. we serve. We want the region to improve because of the quality of the overall educational experience
right.
we provide them with.
Of course.
They need to go and be leaders.
So I want to go a little bit into your backstory and the passion that that you have for education and kind of where, not only where that comes from, but also I'm curious about any times in your life as you were progressing to where you are now, where you felt like the other. I would imagine there were plenty of circumstances where you were not expected to look like you do and be who you are and hold the positions that you've held. Can you give us a quick story about any instance where that was the case and how you dealt with that and what your lessons learned were?
Well, it's been a very interesting life, let me put it that way. I've always been curious. Let me step back. I'm a middle child, okay, which I'm one of nine children, mm-hmm. okay? My parents were sharecroppers in Arkansas. After I was born, a couple of years afterwards, they moved to Southern California to take advantage of opportunity out there. And my father worked as a semi-skilled laborer in Kaiser Steel. My mother stayed home with all of those other four children that were born after me. Okay, and then once they all were in elementary school, she started doing domestic work. What my parents always taught me to do is to, my father, I'll say it, we've heard it a lot, sticks and stones can break your bones, or words can never hurt you. Okay, so I've heard words. I've never let them stop me. What I've always done is stay focused on the work and trying to do it to the best of my ability. And if I couldn't, my parents taught me that you seek assistance. Okay, so I try to tell the students where I am. You seek assistance. And if someone says no, it's okay, go to the next person.
I was just going to say, certainly there were times when you sought assistance and the answer was no, or, you know, whatever,
I think that the answer was never no. When you're that direct, the answer is not no. What it is it can be superficial, okay? And it can be, what can I say, polite. Okay, just polite, but it won't necessarily be forward moving, okay? Mm-hmm. So that's something I think you have to have your antenna up for. It has to stay up. I would say that what I've always tried to do, and it's something I'm trying to get our students to do, the changing demographic, is not to throw in the towel, to always understand, as my father always said, there's more than one way to get something done. Always. If one door closes, are there other ways into that house that you may need to? There's a back door, there may be a window. There may be you wait until someone is coming up and say, may I go in with you? I mean, there are many different ways. I have not intentionally, and I'll tell you a couple of things in a moment, but I have not put a lot of energy or time into worrying about obstacles. I've always thought about how can I get around, under, over that. I've tried to be very patient in my life and to actually show value. And if you're willing to work, as you probably know, if you're willing to work hard and you generate a good product, a door will open for you. The issue is what level of recognition do you get?
Okay.
Yeah. How do you get the recognition and
that you deserve for the work that you have done?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the ways in which you, I think you do that is you sometimes you make a door. That's what I did when I went to the office of the chancellor, is I made that door. Okay. And I'll tell you about a couple of things that happened and my reaction to them along the way. I think that they were sort of in the realm of implicit bias, not truly understanding that that's not really a joke, okay? At one of the institutions that I worked and at leadership level, when I was introduced to an all-male, an all-white male leadership team, the president had said, well, I want you guys to get to know each other. I'm the only woman, I'm a black woman, and one of the gentlemen says, well, then Ira can cook for us. Okay?
Oh, no.
And so what I said, remember those are words. Those are just words, okay? And so I said, well, as soon as I win one of those competitions on one of those cooking shows on TV, and they looked and if you had seen the expression, then you would have known that he figured something must be wrong with that. We actually became quite good friends.
What year was this?
Oh my gosh, that was 21st century.
Ira can cook for us?
Yes.
How could he not know that that was not an appropriate thing to say?
You know, the issue is it had much to do with the context, totally male, all white male, no diversity.
Okay.
What I will say is that that president really diversified that team.
Good.
Ended up being another African-American female on the team.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
What's the other, you said there were a couple, what's the other story?
Oh, let's see.
Well, I'm still blown away by that one. I'm still blown away by that one, and I think you're very gracious, and the fact that you were able to make an ally and a friend of that man says a lot about you, and I think it also says that, as you put it, implicit bias, and sometimes people don't know that what they're saying is offensive to the person that they're speaking to or about, and it becomes a teachable moment. And I would say that that was a teachable moment that probably continued over time long after that particular meeting.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that you do is you figure out ways to demonstrate support, and you take an opportunity to talk about those things that I really do believe education, public and higher ed, don't necessarily provide experiences or knowledge in, and one has to do with difference. Mm-hmm. We talk about diversity. When you look at curriculums, we don't see them integrated in terms of, say, history. Mm. Okay, I will tell you, when I was in high school, I remember, and much of the time I was the only Black person in my class. Okay.
Been there.
So, yeah.
Been there.
So it was a fascinating experience. Yeah. But I remember we were talking about the Civil War, and in the textbook there was a paragraph, maybe it was 4 inches in length. And I asked the professor, I said, I don't understand. If there was a war and people were enslaved, why is there only a little brief paragraph in the entire history book? And the professor could not answer that question for me. I think that what we see today in terms of implicit bias is that as a country, we have not fully acknowledged the complicated history and the complexity of that history, which is now, I think, coming back to smack us in some ways, because we haven't provided ourselves fully in all of our beautiful diversity with information about why we are where we are in terms of our interpersonal relations, in terms of our stereotypes, in terms of our expectations of the human potential and people who look different from us. So that was quite a pivotal moment for me then, and I remember I read during the summer Black Like Me and started thinking about ways in which people could see each other for what their intrinsic value might be, their ability to contribute, to be friends, to share in human experiences from a different perspective. And pretty much that's what I've devoted my life to, is trying to understand what's behind you. When I look at you, when you talk to me, and I hear things that are different from my experience, you know, I want to understand
where
them.
Where does that come from?
Yeah, where is it? Because it's got to be enriching. It's a different experience than the one I've had. If we share in that, we might be able to do something that is really wonderful together in the community, in a club.
I love that. That is the whole mission of this podcast, to do exactly what you just said, is to help people see some of themselves in someone that doesn't look like them, sound like them, pray like them, whatever like them, and to see that that person also has value. That person also deserves to be seen. You might not agree with that person, and that's okay. But you do not have the right to attack their humanity.
That's absolutely, absolutely. And if we, the thing that's so amazing to me, and this is, I'm gonna, I guess, express advocacy for the liberal arts.
Okay.
We talk about the value of STEM, and it definitely is valuable because, you know, with the technological advancements that human beings are able to create and innovate around, of course, that actually can improve the quality of our lives.
Sure.
But in terms of the quality of our relationships, that comes through the liberal arts, the humanities.
Creativity.
Absolutely. And right. History, mm-hmm. Political science, literature. Mm-hmm. Those give us windows into how different groups of people in different parts of the world who are living under different circumstances, different levels of development, are learning to innovate and create and improve and create group, create respect for one another within that group. And I think that it's when we talk about one of the greatest needs, if technology is going to help us to automate, it's going to free us up from a lot of the laborious jobs. And what we need to be able to do is to use better judgment, to think of things outside of ordinary functions,
mm-hmm,
okay,
mm-hmm.
Communicate better, be able to work in teams. Now look at all the extraordinary diversity that's happening right here in Texas, mm-hmm, in the mm-hmm. Houston area. So those kinds of recognitions and investments in terms of understanding and learning, they come from the liberal arts.
Right.
Windows into what's behind you.
I right? love that. Windows into what's behind you. I love the whole concept of taking education in this direction. And unfortunately, our education system is not designed to embrace what you just articulated. So that's a whole nother conversation.
Which we can have.
Which we can have.
I'm working on
which
it.
Which we can have at another time. Yeah. But I know that you are doing your part as the leader of the University of Houston Clear Lake to create and foster that kind of an environment for the students who are fortunate enough to be on your campus. If there were one thing that you would like to leave our audience with today, as it relates to where we are as a nation and as a world, that would give us hope, particularly as someone who is leading a university that is educating our young people who are literally our future, what would that be?
I would say that what we need to do is to sort of create greater distance between our own educational socialization, okay? Greater distance between that, and pay a little more attention to them. They're much more willing to listen to each other, to work together. This is what I'm finding on my campus, which is incredibly diverse. We're a Hispanic-serving institution. We have an increasing number of international students, students who are immigrants, who migrate from different parts of the country, which, again, comes with different ways of thinking, speaking, doing. Also languages. We have so many languages from different parts of the country. I would say, look at the students. Look at the younger people. Listen to them. They're not judging each other so quickly. They are trying to understand who are you and what might we be able to do together. One of the most beautiful things on my campus is, and I watch this every Friday, is to walk across the campus and to see no color lines, no gender lines, no sexual orientation lines. The people are walking together. The students are walking together, talking together, meeting together in different spaces. And so I would say to use them as an example in reverse and be more open and listen and less judgmental about where people say they're from and what they value and try to be more understanding of it.
I love that. Absolutely love that. And I have this picture of students on your campus walking and talking and being and conversing and just embracing the diversity that is there on your campus and that exists within our society. Thank you, Dr. Blake, so much for sharing your perspective and your expertise. And I think your university is in excellent hands.
Oh,
and
thank you.
Look forward to seeing how things progress there. And I hope that those of you who are watching and listening will take to heart some of the words that Dr. Blake has shared with us today. Thank you for taking the time to watch and listen, for giving her permission to speak, and for listening with an open mind. We'll see you next time.